Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
I'm feeling very peaceful today.
Oh, I'm glad. What changed?
Well, I've been chewing echinacea.
Oh.
Yeah.
What does echinacea look like?
A plant.
Uh-huh. And so you just put that plant in your mouth?
Found some wild echinacea in the yard while I was doing my gardening. Mm-hmm. Dug it up or perhaps snipped it off the tree that it grows off of. popped it in my gob.
Ooh. Uh-huh.
That's the sound of the echinacea.
Yeah, okay.
And it's giving me lots of calmness.
Uh-huh.
Centeredness.
Uh-huh. You're on my level now.
You are always so calm and centered. Uh-huh. That's the two words I would use to describe you all the time.
Uh-huh.
And now, wait a minute.
Are you being sarcastic?
And also, are you on the echinacea and have been since as long as I've known you?
No, this is just who I am, babe.
Okay.
This is my level just all the time. Sans echinacea. If I took echinacea,
you would be dead. Your heart would stop. You would still be living and walking, but your heart would be at like 2 BPMs.
Yeah.
Isn't it wild that we measure our heart rate and the tempo of songs
in beats
with
per
the
minute?
Same measurement? Oh. That's beautiful, isn't
that
it?
That is beautiful.
It's like our bodies are always making music. And these are the kinds of observations that I can make now that I'm on the echinacea I found in our yard.
Yeah.
It could have also just been some roots of a plant or a bush that I looked at and I was like, that seems like echinacea to me. Chewed it up. And it gave me calmness. So that's what it is. Could it have been toxic? Some sort of toxic plant that I have been poisoned by?
Yeah, worried about that a little bit, I think.
For sure. But all I know is I love you. I love our family. Uh-huh. And I love this show.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to do it with you. I think I am deeply addicted to echinacea. Do you have any small honors?
Oh, you gave me so much time.
I did.
And I was sitting there, I mean, obviously listening to you intently.
Yes.
But also trying to come up with something to say right now. Why don't you go first?
Why don't I go first?
This is nice. This is nice for the listener because they think we're probably like generally positive, upbeat people that don't have any trouble thinking of positive, upbeat things. But hey, turns out,
this is a muscle. It's a big muscle, and we've been doing this show for 3 or 4 years now. So it's a question of like, I could say just jelly beans, but you know this. They know this already.
Yeah, they know jelly beans.
Have we talked about gushers?
Probably.
I got gushers from a grocery store and I brought them home and I was like, what are these like?
It was actually more like you had to break off a piece of the brick of gusher.
The gushers fused together, but we like that about gushers. We love the gooey mess they make. So there it is, gushers. Uh-huh. You happy now, America?
I came up with my small wonder.
Good.
In your rant.
Good.
I'm going to say the vacuum.
The vacuum. Mm-hmm. We got a good one.
Yeah.
We've done dust busters. This is big. This is not dust busters.
No.
This is tall vacuums.
Everybody stop writing that complaint email. We know. We've done dust buster. I am surprised continually how when you vacuum a carpet, all of a sudden it's like, oh,
clean?
Look at this room. Look at this room now. Look at this house I just moved into yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been having to do that a lot because we are finally.
That bathroom.
Finally getting our house fixed from when it froze in February.
Yeah, when you make a bathroom, you need a lot of different people in the village.
Oh, it's like a pizza pie, isn't it, the bathroom?
And so we've had a bunch of different people coming through, and everybody kind of has a different policy on what they will and won't track through your house.
And they're doing hard work. They're working their butts off. Yeah. We're not ones to complain. Luckily, we have vacuum.
In order to get to our bathroom, you have to go through our bedroom.
Yes.
And that is where we sleep and where our baby sleeps.
Yeah.
And it's very important to us to keep that clean.
Yeah.
And so.
It's our temple.
We've been doing a lot of vacuuming and it just works. It just works.
It just works, folks. Hey, you go first this week. Can you believe it?
Yes. My first thing is field trips.
Oh my God, this is a good one. Mm-hmm. What is the best field trip you ever went on? Or the most memorable one, at least?
I was thinking about this, and it's kind of a toss-up, because when I think of field trips, two things come to mind. First, I think when I was in first grade, we went to the Hostess Factory.
What? Are you kidding? That's the best field trip. Is that in St. Louis?
I mean, we went to, yes. I don't know if there are multiples. I don't know. I didn't do any research on Hostess to answer this question, but I know that we went to a place where snowballs were made.
That's sick. That's so awesome.
I remember that being really cool. Although at the time, we were operating under the false notion that I was allergic to chocolate. So that was kind of a challenge.
Oh, bummer. You still Twinkie it up, but right?
Yeah, I could Twinkie the hell out of that field trip.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember what grade this is. This speaks to the power of field trips, because I cannot remember when this happened. But there was a period when we were doing weekly field trips to the art museum.
Weekly?
Yeah.
Were they getting a lot of new art every week?
No, it was part of this educational series they did, where your school could sign up and they had a curriculum, and you would go to different wings of the museum and study different time periods and make little artist representations of the things. And I don't remember when I did it.
Yeah.
But I remember it being really cool of like, oh, we're going again.
That sounds
cool. I'm going to get to make something.
Once we got to go to the Huntington Tri-State Airport and go up in the air control tower. Can you imagine?
Whoa.
Can you, this, yeah, and this would have been like 1995 or something like that. Before, let's say, they got a little bit more strict about airport stuff in the wake of a certain event. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was sick. It felt like the entire time I felt like I should not be here. There are probably buttons in this room that I could bump up against and really make a mess of things.
Yeah.
They do not do that anymore. I guarantee it.
I'm sure there, I'm sure there
frickin'
was a
25, first graders just like running around this room where people press buttons to make sure planes don't run into each other. Holy shit.
I'm sure there was like a last class that didn't know they were the last class to get that privilege.
Yeah.
Also, I will say, and this says a lot, that this wasn't my first field trip, but we also went to Six Flags.
Mm.
It was senior year, and it was like physics day at Six Flags.
Come on.
And so our physics teacher gave us this worksheet that we were supposed to complete.
Nobody did it, I bet.
I think we all did, but then like he didn't even collect it. You know, it was like one of those things of like, here you go. If you have to figure out the velocity. And we were like, okay. And we just came up with some stuff. And then I feel like you didn't even turn it in. Like it didn't even get graded. It was just we all know why we're here.
God, that's good.
I couldn't find a lot of like when the first field trip was, obviously, because who would categorize like we went to my uncle's farm,
right?
Fed the pigs. But I did find a lot about the educational value of field trips.
Oh, for sure. I bet there's a lot on that.
I will say, and so the article I found is old. It's from 2013.
Yeah.
Which doesn't feel like that old to me, but I know is
almost
objectively old.
It's like 8 years old, yeah.
But the article was from a journal called Education Next, and it said that at one time, the Field Museum in Chicago was welcoming more than 300,000 students each year, and that number has dropped by 100,000 of this article. Also, the Cincinnati Arts Organization saw a 30% decrease in student attendance between 2002 and 2007. More than half of schools that took this American Association of School Administrators survey had eliminated planned field trips in 2010 and 2011. Some of its budget.
Yeah, some of it's like No Child Left Behind and stuff, right?
Some of it is teaching you the tests.
Yeah.
Like their whole focus is improving test scores.
That sucks shit.
And so they don't have time for field trips.
Okay.
Which is real sad.
It is extremely sad. I can't remember a lot of things from school. I remember most of the field trips I went on.
I know.
Which is saying something.
Did you guys ever go outside of the city?
Did we ever go outside of the city?
Because the big thing with field trips is going to museums and zoos and stuff. And I know Huntington is not.
No, but we would go to factories. We went to the Heiner's Bread Factory. We went to, there is a series of locks and dams on the Ohio River that we got to go inside of and see all the machinery inside of that. I remember that very well. I remember a lot of stuff. One day we just went to the Rose Garden at Ritter Park and just like walked around and talked about all the different flowers that were there. It was super cool.
No, and that's a cool reminder too, because like when I think of field trips, I do tend to think of like museums and historic sites, but like you can just
look around you.
You can turn a lot of stuff into a field trip.
Sure.
So there was a big study done. There is a museum in Arkansas called Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, and it just opened in 2011.
Okay.
And so that gave, these researchers an opportunity to like really get in there at the ground floor and like study the impact it was having on people. It is the first major art museum to be built in the United States in the last four decades.
What?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, like, most art museums have been around for a long time.
I guess so.
Nobody's out there like building a new art museum necessarily. And
nobody's making new art.
Yeah, that's a shame.
All the art got made already. Now it's just a question of how many Indiana Joneses we can get out there and find it all inside the mummy's crypt.
Really appreciate how you pluralize that.
Thanks.
So this is a big old art museum. I'm not super familiar with it, but apparently it has more than 50,000 square feet of gallery space and an endowment in excess of $800 million. So they administered over 10,000 surveys to students and 489 teachers at 123 different schools to kind of look and see the impact that
this incredible museum had
on their sweet brains. Would literally, they'd get an hour tour of the museum and they'd discuss about five paintings and then they would follow up with them and find out kind of what the impact was. And a lot of students, like we're talking between like 70 and 80% of students could remember like stuff about the paintings they saw when they followed up with them later. And these are like not super, like obviously one of them was like Rosie the Riveter. Like, yeah, you could maybe remember that. But then there was also an Eastman Johnson painting called At the Camp, Spinning Yarns and Whittling, which I've never heard of.
No. Fun name, though. Sounds like a Sufjan Stevens.
But weeks later, students were followed up with about that painting, and they said, oh, yeah, that's the painting that depicts people making makeable syrup.
Makeable syrup?
Maple syrup.
Oh, okay. Syrup that can be made. No. Makeable syrup. That's amazing.
Yeah. There's also a lot of research to talk about how it increases critical thinking. Because when you study art or, you know, any kind of sculpture or painting or whatever,
yeah,
you know, you're learning about like what your impression is and also what the artist's intention was and what historical influences there were. I mean, it teaches you to look at something and to think about all the different components of it. And so it improved critical thinking. Historical empathy was another thing they studied.
Yeah.
Of looking at how early Americans thought and felt and imagining what life was like for those people, which, you know, you can do a lot of when you study historical art.
Yeah, sure. Like reading that out of a history book, it's not easy to connect the dots, especially based on where you live and what the curriculum is of like, oh, those were real people as real as I am living in a different time with like a completely different set of challenges.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that is really the power of a field trip. You know, it's very easy when you sit in the classroom all day long and with a textbook and every class is just sitting and textbook and sitting and textbook. To like go somewhere, it kind of like jumpstarts your brain of like, oh, this is different. I should pay attention.
I think the reason I remember my field trips so well is because how they contextualize all of the stuff that I was learning in a classroom. And without that contextualization, like it would just, my eyes would glaze over eventually and not sort of absorb the information. Yeah.
Yeah, when I was in eighth grade, we had this opportunity. And of course, this required an additional investment. So not everybody did this, but we got to go to Washington, D.C. for like two or three days. It was like a standard eighth grade opportunity. And your parents had to like go to a meeting and pay this money for your flight and your lodging. And then they had like two buses that would like drive around these kids. And I got to go on that. And it was very cool.
I never got to do anything like that. That sounds awesome.
We also went to Jefferson City, which is the state capital of Missouri. Yeah. And I remember this very specifically because one of my classmates in third grade dropped an ice cube down the rotunda and got in a lot of trouble.
Oh, no, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. somehow we all knew about it. I mean, this was one of those kids that like always got in trouble.
Yeah.
So it's always like, what's he going to do this time? And that was the thing he did.
Well, I mean, if it's the kid that always gets in trouble and all they did was drop an ice cube down the rotunda.
That's true. It could have been worse.
Could have been way worse.
Yeah. And I will just say the other thing is that, you know, of course it increases a student's interest in places like museums.
Yeah.
You know, like when we are looking for things to do with our son, we are always thinking about like super fun things we know he'll be interested in.
Right.
And I understand why a lot of families could get in the routine of like, if I'm going to spend money, if I'm going to spend time, if I'm going to drive, I don't know that I necessarily want to take my kid to a place that they are potentially going to hate.
Yeah.
But like a school field trip is like, hey, this is what an art museum is like. And maybe your kid comes home and is like, wow. Yeah. This is not boring. I thought it would be.
Sure.
So I don't know if this is a thing like among kids today. Like if I were to sit down with a fifth grader and ask them, like, tell me about the field trips, and if they would be like, what's a field trip?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if this is really going out of fashion. I mean, I imagine this past year.
Yeah, it certainly went out of fashion.
It definitely did. But I hope it continues.
Yeah. I talked about this, I think, early in this podcast when I talked about VR, how, like the potential for that as like a virtual field trip opportunity where you can like, hey, now we're back in dinosaur times. Check out that Brachiosaurus. Touch him. Smell him. Feel him. Love him. Like the potential for
Don't
that.
Kiss him, though.
Don't kiss him. Come on, Jeremy. Bad kid that always does one bad thing. Always kissing the brontosaurus. Hey, can I steal you away?
Yes.
Thanks. Got a couple jumpy jobs here. Can I do the first?
I'm always excited to hear what word you say.
First one here is sent in from Red Aaron, and it's for Starman Seth, who says, hey there, happy birthday, bud. Thank you for always being there for me and inspiring me to keep my heart open to the world. You're part of the reason I smile every day, and the world is so much brighter with you in it. You are my everyday big wonder. Take on the world, Starman.
See, this is why we do Jumbotrons.
This is it.
This is it right here. Just people sharing their enthusiasm for other people.
People loving people.
Yes.
And that's what it's all about.
That is.
And if we did that a little more.
Oh, no.
Would we even be here, be in this mess?
You know, we sound very altruistic right now, but we do get paid.
We get that money. Hey, you want to read this next one?
Yes. This is for Scoots. It is from Boots.
Love it already.
Hey, Scoots. I just wanted to have our favorite small wonders wish you a happy birthday and tell you how ultra badass you are. In these last 8 years, you've made me a dog person, a wine bar owner, and a splendor champ.
Whoa.
Wink. Wink.
Finish. Sorry.
You are the snug champ of the world, and I love you all the loves and stuff. Thank you for letting me be your person. Happy birthday.
That's, you have an awesome life. Let me just say, do you know what kind of, I wish I had a wine bar and also was good at Splendor.
Mm-hmm.
Splendor's a dope.
Yeah, the wink,
Splendor.
Though. What is the wink?
What does that mean? Maybe they cheat. They've always got some gemstones up their sleeves before they even start. And you got to keep an eye on that. What are we teaching our young people? I don't know.
You're very principled today.
I really am.
Schmanners. Noun. Definition. Rules of etiquette designed not to judge others, but rather to guide ourselves through everyday social situations.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife host, Teresa McElroy.
Every week on Schmanners, we take a look at a topic that has to do with society or manners. We talk about the history of it. We take a look at how it applies to everyday life. And we take some of your questions. And sometimes we do a biography about a really cool person that had an impact on how we view etiquette. So join us every Friday and listen to Schmanners on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
Can I do my thing?
Yes, please.
My thing is the mole. talking about the mole, baby.
I'm so glad.
I'm glad too. Rachel makes fun of me a lot.
I do.
Because I am convinced that everyone's got mole fever right now.
The Mole is on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. You should watch it.
And we have been watching it. Yes. And I have been enjoying it, for sure.
No spoilies.
For sure. Griffin, I feel like, really overestimates the cultural significance of
this
show.
It's a zeitgeist.
Because he's like, man, maybe now that everybody's watching it again, you know, like we'll see a reemergence of. And I'm like, do you think everybody's watching it?
There's never been a better time to catch mole fever, except maybe in the early aughts when the show originally aired.
I am excited because I did watch the first season.
Yes.
There was a second season I've never seen, so I'm excited to dip into that, but we are still on the first season right
now. Yes. So compared to, the big dogs, your Amazing Races, your Survivors, your Big Brothers, which we do not watch the latter.
No.
The Mole was very short-lived. It had two sort of regular seasons, the second of which had a subtitle, which I can't remember. It was like, The Next Betrayal. The Mole, The Next Betrayal. And then there were two seasons of Celebrity Mole, I believe hosted by Ahmad Rashad. And then there was a fifth season that just came back, and I don't remember anything
about that.
None of
that is on Netflix.
It's not. Only the first two seasons are on Netflix. So, it didn't go very long. Season one aired 2001, and then
it was a pretty expensive show.
I don't believe that was true. I mean, not compared to...
Well, here's the thing. Obviously, yeah, Amazing Race, similar, right? Yeah. You're traveling, you're going to historic sites, you're doing tasks. But The Mole, has all of these, additional players that, are trying to attack the team, and all those people got to get money, unless maybe they were production crew people, like the
boom
mic guy.
Also
had to hold a paintball gun.
A key grip with a sniper paintball rifle. Okay, anyway, we got to remember there's people listening to this who don't know anything about The Mole is. Mm-hmm. And explaining the premise of The Mole, I feel like, doesn't really capture what I adore about this show. But basically...
Not a dermatological show.
No, it is you got contestants, 10, I think one season had 13. A group of contestants, around a dozen. Every episode, they collaborate to try to complete a couple of these missions. And if they can do that, if they complete the missions together as a team, they add money to the prize pool that one player will win at the end of the game. The whole time, though, there's the mole. One of them is secretly the mole. And the mole is an operative working for the ABC Corporation. And possibly Anderson Cooper. They possibly answer to Anderson Cooper, who hosts the first two seasons. And they sabotage those missions as best they can, as secretly as they can. And at the end of every episode, everybody takes a 20-question quiz about the identity of the mole. And it's super granular stuff.
Yeah.
What did the mole wear for lunch on Tuesday? What has the mole had their heart broken before?
How tall is the mole?
How tall is
the mole? Stuff that you couldn't just intuit.
Yes. And whoever scores the lowest on the quiz gets booted out. They call it executed.
Executed.
If they did start doing the mole again, I have to think that they would soften some of the language. Because I don't think you can say, you've been executed.
And what I will say, and this is very much of the time period, is that Anderson Cooper sits in front of a computer and very slowly types in the letters of somebody's name. And if they are executed, the screen turns red.
Yeah, it's very late 90s hacker UI style shit. Anderson, I'm going to take a brief sidebar to say Anderson Cooper is all time on this fucking show.
Yes.
It's as if the director came to Anderson Cooper and was like, okay, you are the coolest human being that's ever lived, and you need to assert that energy in every breath that you breathe, every word that you say, every look that you give these contestants.
Also, what typically exists in a reality program is a lot of separation between the host and the contestants.
Yeah.
In The Mole,
he has dinner with them
every night. He is always with them, and he socializes with them. And when a contestant has to leave and he says farewell, it seems very sincere.
Yes, but he always still has this air of, I'm smarter than you are and cooler than you are.
Yeah.
And that's my energy that I have to give off as the host of The Mole. Okay, so anyway, that's the premise of the show. The biggest thing, and it's something that not a lot of reality shows can boast, is that it's interactive for the viewer, because this whole time you're watching these challenges and, seeing, I wonder if they're going to succeed or not. But also, you're watching the whole show like a hawk looking for these signs of sabotage and trying to figure out the whole time who the mole is, which fortunately it's been long enough that I know I watched this first season when it first aired. I do not recall.
Yeah, I know. Who it is. I don't totally trust that because I have an instinct as to who it is.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if this is just some like subconscious memory from the first time I watched it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. And the thing is, like, given the nature of the travel and the various expertises of the contestants, like, people make mistakes.
That's right. Yeah.
And so you're watching it and you're thinking, was that mistake intentional because they're the mole? Or was that mistake just incompetence? Genuine,
yeah. Or was it intentional to make everybody else think you're the mole so that's they'll the fail thing. The test?
Yeah. There is a benefit in getting people to think you're the mole because then they will do poorly on the final quiz and get eliminated.
Exactly. And from a game design perspective, the missions themselves are brilliant in how they incorporate dozens of little points of failure throughout the whole thing. They are convoluted and they take place typically in foreign countries where virtually nobody competing speaks the language, right? And then it's like, okay, you have 5 hours to get to this library. And once you're there, you're going to look inside of these books and find these maps, and then maps will have tickets. And then you have to take the tickets to these specific spots in the city. It's like, there's a lot of places where the mole could sabotage that, but there's also a lot of places where just like you make one mistake and then the team doesn't get the money because you pass or fail as a unit, as a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really brilliant. It's really, really smart. It taps into that, that like werewolf mafia Among Us energy that is like big right now. So in a lot of ways, the mole was well ahead of its time. But apart from just the game design, the whole aesthetic of the show is so fucking unapologetically cornball to the max.
Yeah.
Like it was made by somebody who saw Mission Impossible in theaters 55 times and was like, I'm going to do a show on that.
Yeah. Every episode opens with Anderson Cooper in like all black and a black leather jacket. And he's standing in front of like
Death Valley,
like
somewhere.
A cliff or something. And he's like catching you up on all of the intrigue that has happened so far.
In the previous episode, Jennifer was viciously executed by the mole. Now our teams must go to... It's just so good. There's also a feeling of weirdly... And this is just a artifact of its time watching it now. Like, it feels weirdly underproduced compared to reality shows that are made now. Like, it feels unpolished in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, the people on it are not necessarily reality show personalities as they are kind of trained and bred these days.
And there's also like, there is conflict that occurs between the contestants, but it is not played up in a way as to suggest, like, we know this is good television. Like, these two hate each other. Let's keep putting them in situations.
The dark cloud looming over season one. There's a dude on the season who's like an old retired detective named Charlie who sucks the moon out of the sky and is like
pretty
a genuinely
awful.
Misogynistic like piece of shit that, like, I don't know, I would hope 20 years later that, you know, they've gotten a little bit better about weeding out terrible agents like that from the casting process. But
although we know from our forays into reality television,
that's not always true. No, it's uncomfortable to watch at times. It is. I genuinely wish he was not on the show because it's a nice experience for me watching them all. It's nice and nostalgic, and having this dude on there who's like this broad over here, like, is
that's like early Survivor too, right? Like,
that's I guess.
There's a no perfect show.
No, certainly not. But the mole man, it was too beautiful for this world, but there are rumors circulating that a new season of The Mole is being shot right now in Australia. It's just a rumor. There were like casting notices for some show and they didn't call it The Mole, but it sounded a whole lot like The Mole.
I mean,
it
would explain kind of why it's on Netflix right now.
And why it's having its moment. It's a cultural zeitgeist. I think it's great. I love reality competition shows, and I forgot when we started watching The Mole, it is so rough the first episode or two that I'm like, am I just like nostalgic for this in the same way that I'm in? But then like a few episodes in and you see how like complex the like how well they have pursued the whole concept of the show of trying to determine who a saboteur is and putting them through this, like, you know, gauntlet of tests where they can gain information. Like, it's really smart. Really a brilliant
concept. It's very watchable. It goes very quickly, too, because the tasks they give them, that is one problem kind of with The Amazing Race, is sometimes they will give them tasks that are intentionally tedious.
Yes.
And physically challenging, and as a watcher, you're like, oh God, I can't watch this person try and climb up this hill one more time.
I know.
The Mole isn't really that way. The Mole is very like Mission Impossible, like we need you to go get this file from this agent in this town.
Yeah.
It's not like we want to see you like shoot yourself in the face over and over again.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use for our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. They got so many good shows that you should go listen to and check them out and listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tights and Fights.
Tights and Fights!
Have a good time with the folks over at Tights and Fights.
Have a good time with them! Hey, our new graphic novel, The Adventures in Crystal Kingdom, comes out extremely soon.
Yeah!
And we have an event coming up where we're going to do like a virtual reading of it. It's on July 13th. We're going to have special guests. You can find out more at bit.ly/TazGNLive2021 for more info. We're going to have partner bookstores who are going to be selling books with the signed book plates in them. And also there's a pre-order gift you can get, and it's a lenticular laptop sticker of Kravitz, a beloved character from Crystal Kingdom. And you can find out more about that at bit.ly/Taz4preorder. And we got a bunch of merch over at McRoy Merch. A bunch of good stuff. There's a new Besties shirt. You can show your besties love, finally. There's a stoneware mug with the Adventure Zone logo on it. There's a lot of good stuff over there.
There's that pin of you asking for a sword.
There's a pin of me asking for a sword. There's a we have a pin of the month that we do every month. This month, it's for the Gushy Wolves from our new arc, Taz Ethersea, and sales of that benefit the Innocence Project, which exonerates the wrongly convicted through DNA testing and reforms the criminal justice system to prevent future injustice. Really great cause.
Ethersea. If you all haven't checked out Ethersea, it's really great.
Yeah, we did a whole prequel thing that was 5 episodes. That was a lot of fun. If you don't want to listen to that, I did a short sort of summary thing that you can listen to. Because guess what? I think the day this airs, the first episode proper of the season of us playing D&D and stuff starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, good time to get on board.
Yes.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey.
Oh, I'm so psyched now. The Echinacea has completely run its course. And you know how sweaty I've been over here this whole episode? Uh-huh. I think that's my body trying to push out the toxins of the Echinacea.
Or it could be the 80-degree temperature.
It could also be that it's a billion bajillion degrees in here.
But, yeah. Griffin has a whole command center in here.
This
emits a lot of heat.
It's not my gaming rig, baby. It's this. Body.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.